Now entering the truth zone, deep into the vortex of the information revolution with your host, Michael B.
I am your host, Michael B. Welcome to the truth zone that you've dared to enter deep within the vortex of the information revolution. And speaking about revolution, and first I thank all of you that attended my five-part series on Islam. And, you know, I realize it's funny because I was looking at the statistics and the live listens and the repodcasts were decreasing as I got into parts 4 and 5. And I was willing to take that risk. You know, I realize 5 days of the same subject, it can get a little bit tedious. And, you know, and I'm more than capable of doing it. God knows I've got the wind. You know, if I was doing a 2-hour daily show Monday through Friday instead of 45 minutes, most likely I could have done that 5-part series in 1 2-hour show. But unfortunately, I'm not living off of the government. I'm one of those still, decreasing number of Americans that is 100% supporting himself with zero government support. Even with the government stealing my money, even with the people I work for stealing my money because they've made bad business decisions. And so they've said to me, well, you either take a 10% pay cut or your last day is tomorrow. So what choice did I have? But they will be, in time, they will be hearing from me. Believe me. So, you know, I know that it was tough sitting through the whole Islam thing, but honestly, it needed to be done. And I know in the future, I'm going to be talking about Islam almost every day because it truly is the number one threat on the surface. Again, it's the hammer that the black hand, I'm going to call it the black hand, which is the globalist. And Islam is the hammer, is the murder weapon, if you will, the weapon of assault, the hardcore assault. Whereas the manipulation of the stock market, the manipulation of our taxes and our currency, the food, the air, and I'll be going into those things as we march ahead in the weeks and months to come. That's the soft kill. That's the depopulation. That's why cancer is up over 1,000%. All cancers are up. Cancer in our children is escalating exponentially. Birth defects, autism through the vaccines. Yes, I am an anti-vaxxer. Now, I'm not a total 100% against them. I take the Michael Savage point of view in that there are some that are necessary, however, to flood an infant with a myriad of vaccines to, really, it's like a drug overdose. To overdose our infants, I believe, and of course the mercury, we have to make sure the mercury is not involved. I believe that is what's causing the birth defects in our children. It's the same thing, right? A woman hooked on cocaine, she's pregnant, gives birth, a lot of times that baby is going to be going through cocaine withdrawal because the baby has become an in vitro, but really in the womb cocaine addict. It's the same thing with these vaccines. Flood our children, flood them with all this stuff. The body, the infant body, cannot handle all of this. So probably the best way to do it is a slow spreading out of these vaccines and really only give the ones really that are the most crucial. Okay, I mean, we know that to be true. So you know, I thank you for hanging in there. And I said yesterday I was going to lead with illegal immigration and the impact. We will be doing that. First, though, I do want to address what's going on with Donald Trump and really what's going on with the country. And I did a Facebook Live late yesterday afternoon. And for those of you that are on Facebook that are listening to this, I thank you for the likes and I thank you for listening and thank you for the comments. General Schaefer was on Fox News the other day, and I don't watch mainstream media, but Alex Jones of Infowars.com, I watch him every day from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. on Sundays, and he's got the nightly Prison Planet deal, but by the time 7 o'clock rolls around, I have like OD'd on all the crap that's going on here. So I like to, my evenings, I like to watch wrestling or I like to play video games. So, that's my way. I don't do drugs and I don't drink to satisfy myself. I have other avenues and I work out 2 hours a day after the show to get all the tension out. But so that's how I knew that General Schaefer was on. And he said that the country is in a state of civil war, that the deep state, which, you know, at first I thought we were calling it the shadow government, but the deep state, people like that term, great, it's fine, is in a state of civil war. Okay, war is never civil. And this is not a civilian-to-civilian war. This is, and I know the word mutiny is mostly used on the high seas, but I'm going to say that it's applicable. The United States government has been in a state of treason for a very, very long time. And I started saying this in 2010 when I began doing video shorts on YouTube. And so, as I became more and more aware of what was going on, I deduced that the government is in a state of treason against the American people. Well, now this has mushroomed into the United States government is in direct rebellion against the American people, but through our leader, through our icon, the President of the United States, Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is our icon. He is our lead figure. He is the figurehead of what we want in a president. We, the people, elected him. His message resonated with enough of the country to put him in the Oval Office. So, when the government, and it's both sides of the aisle, clearly the GOP, the Grab Obama's Penis Party, as I dubbed it years ago, clearly has declared war with the Democrats, with the Communist Party, against the United States of America by fabricating false charges against our president. And both parties, excuse me, are seeking impeachment and to ruin this man. And by them saying that he colluded with the Russians and that made him president, that manipulated the election, what they're really saying here is that you, the American people, we're going to vote for Hillary Clinton and put her as president, but the Russians manipulated the election by supposedly sending WikiLeaks emails on John Podesta, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Uma Abedin, Hillary Clinton, and a host of others. WikiLeaks exposed it to the public, and those emails changed your mind. Those emails, which, by the way, we have yet to hear anyone come out and say that all of those emails about the devil worshiping, about the pedophilia coding, about screwing Bernie Sanders out of the election, manipulating the votes. No one yet has said those emails are false. See, and no one has brought a lawsuit against Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. It's the same reason that during the election, Alex Jones had created a shirt that said Bill Clinton is a rapist, and people went out and infiltrated some of Hillary's rallies and Bill Clinton's rallies. Somebody facebombed Fox News one morning with Bill Clinton is a rapist, and Bill and Hillary Clinton never filed the lawsuit. And there's a very simple reason. They don't want this stuff going to a courtroom, because then here's what happens. You file a lawsuit, you have to prove that what they're saying about you is false. Well, people like Alex Jones that have the money can now start bringing in witnesses, and there's depositions, and there are things in writing. Then possibly you have a criminal case. See, they don't want that. That's why no one's talking about these emails. See, what's more important? The fact that these emails were released to the public, or the content of the emails that were released? See, they don't want to talk about that. And what they're saying to you, the American people, is that you were manipulated by the Russians, and that made you vote for Donald Trump. Now, who believes that? And that's what they're saying about me. Because I voted for Donald Trump, I've been manipulated by the Russians, and if the Russians didn't hack the emails, didn't hack the DNC, which there's not a shred of evidence that they did that, if Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin weren't working together, I would not have voted for Donald Trump. Well, I hate to tell you this. I voted for Donald Trump because the Clintons are evil scumbags. That's why. And the entire Democratic Party are filled with scumbags. That's why I voted for Trump. And by the way, all that stuff in the emails, I've known for years. David Icke talked about it. Alex Jones talked about it. Roger Stone, Larry Nichols. The names go on and on and on. Okay? Everybody has talked about these things. Now, all those emails did for me was, I don't know who the hell John Podesta was, and Project Veritas, I didn't know who Bob Cramer was. So I didn't know all of the exact details, all of the names, but I knew the general synopsis. I know that these people are devil worshippers. I know that they're into little children. I know all about Jeffrey Epstein. I know all about the 26 flights that Bill Clinton took to his private island. I know all about that stuff. I mean, it's in books, and again, how come David Icke has never been sued? How come Roger Stone has never been sued? How come Jerome Corsi of World News Daily, WND.com, how come he hasn't been sued with all of these so-called slanderous accusations? Why hasn't any lawsuits been filed from the Clintons? because they don't want this in court. So, this government of ours is an absolute rebellion. It's not a civil war. The government is working on taking out our figurehead, which in turn takes out all of us. And I had posted on Facebook that, and this was breaking on the Alex Jones Show by Michael Cernovich, apparently every president has a temporary transition team. They're called Schedule C employees, if you will. And their term is for 120 days. During that time, they are either offered a permanent position somewhere in his administration, or they're just expired. And there's a man, and I believe I have his name right, John DeStefano. And I think I said Stefano in the live short I did yesterday, but it's John DeStefano that is in charge of this personnel situation. Now, why Donald Trump let him be in that position, only he can answer that. But the guy was and is a never-Trumper. And so, I think Cernovich had said that less than 15% of those Schedule C people have been offered jobs. Meaning that 85% of those vacancies are going to be filled with who DeStefano wants in there. Now, I think that we can come to the logical conclusion that these people are not going to be friends and allies of Donald Trump. So, I had written that the swamp isn't being drained, Donald Trump is being drained. Now, I made the mistake, I didn't realize, excuse me, little tough days, a little bit of allergies here. I didn't realize that a lot of Facebook universe is made up of people that didn't get out of the fourth grade. And I omitted the fact that draining Donald Trump is bad. I guess I didn't convey that properly. So two people quickly got on. One gave me a four-year-old meme, and another one just said, well, how's it going to be better with Michael Pence? Well, I never said that. I just said that Donald Trump is being drained, not the swamp. And immediately, it was taken as, I think that's a good thing, that Trump is being drained, and I must be a liberal. Even though I'm on Facebook every single day, these two people see all of my feeds, I've answered their original posts, but yet they attack me. Because it is obvious, and I've known this, and the Trump campaign proved this, that the people on the right are just as hair-triggered and emotionally unstable as the left. See, the left wing and the right wing are two wings of a dead bird, as far as I'm concerned. Because this entire construct desperately needs CPR, okay? So immediately I'm attacked, and I said, how do you people deduce that I'm in favor of Donald Trump being drained? Well, your post was ambiguous. Well, let's say it was. Well, then why don't you intellectually ask me the question, well, do you think that's a good thing that Trump is being drained? Or do you think that's a bad thing? No, right away, four-year-old attack. So, folks, you really need to get the emotion out of this, because that's how they're getting us. And as Al Pacino said in Godfather Part 3, don't let your anger cloud your judgment. See, that's when you make mistakes. So, we really need to be intellectual. That is why I did the five-part series on Islam. And that is why I'm going into the immigration crisis. And it is a massive, massive crisis. And we have to understand that if we don't get that wall, if we don't start pushing back on this illegal immigration, if we don't start speaking out on how this is damaging our way of life, we're really going to be in serious problems. And not only is the United States being hurt, but few people realize that the country that is being evacuated also gets hurt. So, I've gone on a 20-minute rant. I'm now going to play for you. This comes from immigrationbythenumbersusa.com. This is a brilliant man. It's a two-part series. It's going to be close to 15 minutes. We'll see how far we get today. He uses a gumball machine to show the impact of immigration and how it creates world poverty. So let's start with this clip.
Some people say that mass immigration into the United States can help reduce world poverty. Is that true? Well, no, it's not. And let me show you why. This gumball represents the 1 million legal immigrants that the United States has taken every year on average since 1990. Now, who in the world deserves our humanitarian compassion? The World Bank has one measure of the desperately poor of the world. They make less than $2 a day. And how many people make less than $2 a day in the world? We'll start with Africa. In Africa alone, there are 650 million people who make less than $2 a day. 650 million. And in India, another 890 million people, desperately poor. China adds another 480 million people, making less than $2 a day. And unfortunately, the rest of Asia has a heartbreaking 810 million people who the World Bank says make less than $2 a day. And finally, there's 105 million of Latin America's population that are desperately poor. All told, the World Bank says there are 3 billion people in the world, 3 billion people who are desperately poor, making less than $2 a day. That's 3,000 gumballs. And every year, we take a million and suggest that we've somehow made a humanitarian difference. Of course, we don't pull our immigrants from these desperately poor populations, do we? These people are too poor, too sick, too disconnected to make it here as immigrants. We tend to pull our immigrants out of the better off poor of the world. And Mexico tends to define the type of immigrant that we bring here because the plurality of people come from Mexico. And Mexico is poor. How many people in the world live in countries that have average incomes lower than that of Mexico? And the World Bank tells us that that number is these 3 billion plus another 2.6 billion people. 5.6 billion people in the world who live in countries with average incomes below that of Mexico. That's 5,600 gumballs. And so what is it that the elites are telling us? They're telling us that when we take this 1 million immigrants, that we somehow or another are tackling world poverty. And we have to do it regardless of the effect on our unemployed, the working poor, the most vulnerable members of our society, regardless of the effect on our natural resources. Even if we went by the most radical proposals in Washington, which are to actually double our immigration to 2 million a year, which would totally overwhelm our physical, natural, and social infrastructures, we couldn't make a noticeable difference. And we may be really hurting the impoverished people of the world because the million that we do take are among the most energetic, often the better educated, certainly the most dissatisfied people that if they did not immigrate would be the agents for change to improve the lot of all the people in these countries. The true heroes in the global humanitarian field are the people in these countries who have the wherewithal to immigrate to another country, but instead stay in their countries to apply their skills to help their fellow countrymen. Unfortunately, our immigration system tends to entice these very type of people to abandon their countrymen. The impossibility of making even a dent is actually worse than it looks here. Because last year, when we took 1 million immigrants, these countries added, births over deaths, 80 million more people into the impoverished population. And this year, Congress is bringing in 1 million legal immigrants. And this year, according to the United Nations, these countries are expected to add another 80 million people. And next year, you can be quite sure that Congress, unless stopped by the American voters, will bring in another 1 million immigrants. And these countries, unfortunately, will be adding another 80 million people into these impoverished nations. We could take 5 million a year, but we'd never get ahead of what's happening in these countries. Not in this century. Don't you see? Immigration can never be an effective or significant way to deal with the suffering people of the world. They have to be helped where they live. 99.9% of them will never be able to immigrate to a rich country. There's no hope for that. They have to bloom where they're planted. The only place that 99.9% of these people can be helped is where they live. Let's help them there.
So what he says is very true. Who can deny that? And did you notice he didn't bring up the word illegal one time? He only talked about the legal ones coming to this country and other countries. Didn't even get into illegal immigration. The legal ones are causing such a burden on our natural resources, our infrastructure, right? Our government programs. And who can deny that? Look at the 8 years of Barack Obama. We have more Americans out of work than since the 1970s, right? The gap worldwide, the gap between the rich and the poor has never been wider since this has been tracked. So what this gentleman said is right on point. Just open your eyes, people. Just look out the window. I want to get into some statistics on how illegal immigration is such a paralyzing fiscal burden on we, the United States taxpayer. This is coming from fairus.org. The fiscal burden of illegal immigration on United States taxpayers, this is 2013. So never mind 4 years later. Because if you think it's any better, you can do your own fact-checking. This report estimates the annual cost of illegal immigration at the federal, state, and local level to be about $113 billion. Nearly $29 billion at the federal level and $84 billion at the state and local level. The study also estimates tax collections from illegal alien workers, both those in the above-ground economy and those in the underground economy. Those receipts do not come close to the level of expenditures and, in any case, are misleading as an offset because over time, unemployed and underemployed U.S. workers would replace these illegal alien workers. And, you know, I've heard people say over the last several years, well, you know, if Americans weren't so lazy, we wouldn't have the, you know, we need these people to do our cherry picking and our gardening. Well, that's true. There are a lot of lazy Americans, and most of them are our young people. And I blame the liberal parents who coddle their children, let them play video games all day, can't get a little sweat on little baby's brow. Oh, it's gentle. Get his ass off the couch or her ass. Get them off the computer. Give them something to do. Make them get a job. As soon as I hit 16, my mother took me down to the post office, filled out my working papers, and she knew someone that knew someone that could get me a job at the local supermarket. And that following, I think my birthday was like on a Wednesday or something. The following Monday, I'm stocking shelves at a supermarket, okay? And I never looked back. All right? And that was 36 years ago. But these parents today coddle and kiss their children's ass, creating a jellyfish society. So, yeah. So, some of that is true, that Americans don't want to do the work that these illegal immigrants do, so we need them for the economy. False. False and untrue. Not only are they blocking Americans from working, yes, with the help of jellyfish parents, but those Americans that are working, wages are being driven down. Why would I pay an American legally $12 an hour? And I don't do this, by the way. I'm just using myself as an example. Instead, I could pay some Mexican guy under the table $8 an hour. And he's going to work like a maniac. Because most likely, when he left Mexico, he was living in abject squalor. Living conditions you and I couldn't even imagine. So, an income of $8 an hour and sharing a house or in an apartment with four other people is like you and I living in Donald Trump's Manhattan penthouse, okay? So, wages get driven down. And Americans that want to work have to compete. And that leads me, really kind of segueing lightly, into the NAFTAs, into the GATS, into the TPP, which right now is off the table, but could be resurrected at any time under a different name, and hopefully Trump will keep blocking that. But when we open up these so-called free trade agreements, and now our U.S. companies, like IBM, can outsource our American jobs across the globe to these impoverished countries that this man is talking about, now Americans not only have to compete against fellow Americans for a job, but they have to compete against the globe. And why, if I'm IBM, why, excuse me, why would I pay an American worker $40 an hour when I could pay some Indian dude in India, which, by the way, they're not as good as us, and I've been in the IT industry for 31 years. I know what I'm talking about, friends. And I could pay him $15 an hour, and I could work him like a dog because India doesn't have the labor protection laws that we have. And I could exploit these people six ways to Sunday. So why would I pay an American? So now I could offer, if I really want an American, I could say, well, you know what, dude? You know, I could get an Indian, I could get two Indians for $15 an hour each. Why would I pay you $35 an hour? If you really want this job, and if my client is demanding an American resource, well, you're going to take $25 an hour. And if you don't like it, I'll find someone that's been out of work a long time, and I'll get them for $25. Do you understand? Do you understand Why are wages are being driven down? Do you understand why companies don't have to hire you anymore? Don't have to offer you retirement benefits. Don't have to offer you medical benefits. Don't have to give you a raise that could jerk your chain every 6, 9, or 12 months and threaten you with you losing your job. And it's not firing, by the way. It's just reallocating to somewhere else. Do you understand why this is happening? It's happening because government has colluded with big corporations to maximize profits and weaken country after country after country. And these people don't care about the long-term ramifications. You could come back and say, well, Mikey B, you know, doesn't that hurt America? They don't give a damn. Look at these CEOs. They're in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. They don't give a damn about what's going to happen 20, 30 years from now when we're in the 2050s and we have such an underpopulation crisis, and I'll get into that down the road, how we're in a serious depopulation crisis that very few people understand, and I'm going to give you that formula maybe tomorrow or maybe sometime next week. They don't care about this country collapsing. What they care about are their golden parachutes. They're 65 years old. Their job now is not what's best for the American people, not what's best for the country, because they don't have to anymore. It's all about the bloated, inflated, fabricated stock price. It's about meeting that quarter goal of more money, more money, more money, more money. And when a company starts offering cheaper services, their stock goes down. And the first thing they do, they fire their best people. They fire their best people that make the most money, and they ship it off to Outer Mongolia. Time after time. But they meet their stock price. They get their golden parachute. They get the hell out. They retire multi-millionaires. Their family are saved. They put their fortunes in a trust that doesn't get taxed. They've got every loophole. Their family's secure. And you are effed. Okay? That's what's going on. Simple, simple, simple. That's what they're doing to us. They don't care that the American people are being poorer and poorer and poorer. And then you throw in with the wage war, then you throw in the manipulation of the currencies. Well, you know, very, very difficult spot to be in. So let's look at the key findings from FAIR, FAIRUS.org. Illegal immigration cost the taxpayers, well, yes, $113 at the federal, state, and local. Okay, so the annual outlay that illegal aliens cost U.S. taxpayers is an average amount per native-headed household of $1,117. The fiscal impact per household varies considerably because the greatest share of the burden falls on the state and local taxpayers whose burden depends on the size of the illegal alien population in that locality. Education for the children of illegal aliens constitutes the single largest cost to taxpayers at an annual price tag of nearly $52 billion, with a B, dollars. Nearly all of those costs are absorbed by the state and local governments. And people wonder why. Why is California going bankrupt? Why is New York going bankrupt? And believe me, these libtard states, they're all in the red, baby. It's funny. Their color is blue, but they're all in the red. Now, states like Texas, who has a massive, massive fiscal burden from illegal immigration, the only reason why that the state of Texas is prospering is because they don't have one thing that the state of California has, that the state of New York has, and the state of New Jersey and Connecticut, and basically almost every state except for a select few, and that is Texas does not have a state tax. That's it. And by not having a state tax, that makes it very, very appealing for businesses to relocate that are being burdened by heavy taxation at the federal and state level. So you see companies like Toyota coming into Texas, and you just see a whole bunch of other different ones. There was another one, it's a smaller company. I forget the name right now. But you see companies leaving California and they're coming to Texas because Texas doesn't have a state tax. And you mark my words, folks, you're hearing it here. If the day ever comes that Texas creates a state tax, it's ball game over. It'll just lead to a gradual collapse, and will be just as bankrupt as the state of California. So you mark my words. You just mark my words on that. So with 3 minutes left, I'm going to save part two of the immigration gumball. So at the federal level, about one-third of outlays are matched by tax collections from illegal aliens. And, you know, this boggles my mind. If these people are here illegally, how can they possibly pay taxes? And if they're paying taxes to the IR freaking S, why aren't these people being picked up and deported the hell out of here? They're breaking the law. So, I don't know. Call me crazy. But I think that the IRS collecting taxes from illegal aliens, they're aiding and abetting. They're an accessory to a crime. And that crime is being in the United States illegally. Not hard to figure out. So this entire government is breaking the law. They're in a state of rebellion. They're renegades. And this Washington, D.C., and all the states that comply to this nonsense, and all the sanctuary cities, they're in default. Do you understand? They have defaulted on their public oath to protect and preserve the United States of America. And ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to close with this and continue tomorrow. What's happening here, folks, is that you and I are also accessories to the crime. Because this country cannot function without our money. And as we stand, and I, you know, I can't tell you what to, legally, I cannot tell you what to do, so I'm not going to. I'm just saying that we are voluntarily funding this government that is an out and out rebellion against the Constitution of the United States and against the American people, and we are voluntarily complying and funding it. My name is Michael B. This is The Truth Zone. You can email me at thetruthzone27@gmail.com. You could also go to my public group page on Facebook, The Truth Zone. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow, 10 a.m.